Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Are you gonna include the CBC, Mr. President, in your conversations with your urban agenda, your inner city agenda, as well as
Are you gonna include
the Congressional Black Caucus and the Congressional
Well,
Hispanic
I would.
Caucus,
I tell you what. Do you want to set up the meeting? Do you want to set up the meeting?
No.
Are they friends of yours?
I'm just a reporter. I know some of them, but I'm sure.
Let's set up a meeting. I would love to meet with the Black Caucus. I think it's great.
Hello, and welcome to the first and hopefully only solo episode of Politics, a podcast about American politics featuring an affable Kiwi asking questions of an irascible American journalist. My name is Jeb Lund. I am the American journalist, as you might have guessed, and I used to be employed full-time, so if you are somebody who has full-time jobs lying around, you're more than welcome to hand them to me. In the meantime, I'm a contributor at Esquire and here, and then also my other podcast, This Week in Atrocity. Tim is earning a well-deserved rest. He is, as they say, in the Anzac nations and in England on the continent on holiday. And so, I hope that he's having a lovely time and you'll get to hear from him next week. In the meantime, I just wanted to sum up two things that have gone on this week that you might have seen. On Monday, Michael Flynn, Donald Trump's national security advisor, resigned. Now, this was over a conversation that he had with a Russian envoy in December on the same day that then-President Barack Obama had instituted sanctions against the Russian government. Now, those sanctions came because Russia very clearly had been monkeying around with the U.S. election. And what we can assume or surmise from many people in the intelligence community who have spoken about this conversation, what we can assume is that Flynn reassured the Russian government that Donald Trump would roll back some of those sanctions. So, to the surprise of basically everybody, the Russians didn't respond to the sanctions that the Obama administration had placed on them. And that is what sent the intelligence community back to seeing what sort of communications might have happened domestically between the United States and representatives of the Russian government. Because basically not acting out was extraordinarily out of character. So, everybody's going, well, what's going on? So the intelligence community goes and looks at these communications, and they find this flurry of communication between Michael Flynn and I keep hearing it pronounced correctly, but I'll probably get this wrong. Kislyak, the Russian envoy. Anyhow, this is basically bad for a couple of reasons. One, if you're the national security advisor, you ought to be aware that any communication you're having with a foreign power from the U.S. is going to be monitored. And the fact that Flynn, I guess, just, spaced on this or thought he might get swept into office before anybody noticed or that he would just get away with it was a bad sign for his probity as a national security advisor. You don't want somebody planning America's geopolitical strategy when he can't figure out that it's, basic standard operating procedure to intercept and monitor these communications. The other problem for Flynn, and this is something you're going to hear a lot about in the next couple of days, if you haven't already heard a lot about it in the last four, is that what he did almost surely violated the Logan Act, which basically prevents non-members of the executive branch from negotiating American foreign policy. There are unofficial terms for this, but basically, the sitting president is in charge, and it doesn't matter if you are the chief aide to the president-elect or are, in fact, the president-elect yourself, you don't get to do the job until you're sworn in. So you're going to hear a lot about this. Nobody's ever been prosecuted under the Logan Act. This might be the first time. This is a very, very good case, evidently, if you're going to take the word of the intelligence community that, that has looked at this stuff. So, you know, that tradition might be broken. But what happened in the meantime, and this is from a bunch of conflicting events, is that Flynn allegedly lied to Mike Pence. He, when asked about the character of his communications with the Russians before Inauguration Day, he said that he did not discuss sanctions with them. So this appears to be the precipitate act that led to his firing. When Trump, the official statement about Michael Flynn's quote unquote resignation is that he had lost the trust of the president. The president could no longer rely on him. And that, you know, we can interpret that a bunch of different ways. I mean, if you really want to be sort of a criminologist about this, the really sinister way of thinking about it is that basically, you know, everybody knew what Flynn, quote unquote, told Mike Pence was bullshit. And this is just the way of getting rid of him because somebody has to take the fall for it. You know, if you're going to go ahead and break the U.S. law, you don't want to say, well, you know, I'm the vice president and the president were involved in it. No, it was just this one renegade general. And Mike Flynn does have the reputation of being sort of a renegade. So that fits. And if you want to be very sinister, you can say that saying that he had lied directly to Mike Pence and then Mike Pence went out and made a statement to the media saying that Flynn had not conducted a discussion with the Russians about sanctions. It was not, you know, the reaction to this is not that Pence was exposed and looked silly. What, you know, if you want to be very sinister, you can interpret this as Pence was in on the know and this is a way of immunizing him, especially if you happen to be one of those Republicans who likes Republicanism, it doesn't like Donald Trump. Donald Trump might then be swept up in this investigation and Pence has no idea. And then he becomes the president and, you know, everyone is happy. That's the really, you know, really sinister Machiavellian view. You know, a more practical Machiavellian view is that Pence and Trump knew all along because Donald Trump had had advisors like Paul Manafort, who was instrumental in helping to destabilize Ukrainian opposition to Russian annexation of Crimea, and that there are already plenty of people in the Trump, the sort of coterie of Trump advisors who already had enough relationship with Russia to go ahead and make this happen anyway. Man, that's a lot. So the implications for the National Security Council are interesting because Flynn, the hope with somebody as erratic as Donald Trump is that his national security advisor would be somebody a little bit more experienced and somebody more sober, somebody capable of managing things. That person was not Michael Flynn. Michael Flynn holds an almost apocalyptic belief in a clash of civilizations between Islam, and you know, he might say radical Islam, but if you go from what the gentleman has said about Muslims in general, he pretty much seems to consider Islam, the whole of it, to be the problem. This happens to be a view shared by Steve Bannon, our wonderful white supremacist advisor to the president, who also sits on the principals committee of the National Security Council. So Flynn wasn't a moderating voice, and in addition, he was evidently just a terrible manager because the National Security Council, which has ballooned to hundreds of employees, didn't really know what American national security policy was. And more to the point, the obsession that the Trump administration has with leaks had begun to alienate and stifle the open conversation that you would want to have with all of your national security staff. Evidently, a lot of these guys were already encrypting their phones and minimizing communication. You know, and basically, if you have the people who are supposed to present you with new data and alternative theories afraid of what you're going to say to them, and, if they're afraid of the reaction that they're going to give to they're going to receive to their opinions, they're going to withhold some of that data and they're going to withhold alternate viewpoints that might be helpful. So, on the whole, Flynn being out is a good thing. The bad news is that it's going to be difficult to find somebody competent who wants to get into this position. So today, an admiral whose last name is Harvard, like Harvard, but with a W as opposed to a V, evidently rejected the opportunity to take the National Security Advisor position, referring to it as, quote unquote, a shit sandwich. You know, if followers of the arts may remember that that is the review, the two-word review, and the total two words of the review for Spinal Tap's album, Shark Sandwich. So that's item number one. Item number two is coming up after the break.
But BB and I have known each other a long time. It might be a bigger and better deal than people in this room even understand. That's a possibility. So let's see what we do.
Let's try it.
Doesn't sound too optimistic, but that's okay. It's good negotiator.
That's the art of the deal.
I also want to thank...
Okay, welcome back. And I just want to apologize if I seem to be kind of gasping a little bit on this recording. I got a nasty cold at the inauguration. I got a fever for 2 days, and it took me almost 2 weeks before the thing dropped into my chest, and I still haven't gotten all my air back. So, you know, I've been kind of running around and, you know, hitting the gym and trying to actually get my wind, but it's still slow coming, and I'm still coughing up gunk. That's very sexy, and I'm glad that you were here to hear that, but this is just my way of explaining why, you know, occasionally you're going to hear me sound like the lead singer of Muse. Anyway, another important thing that happened today is Donald Trump decided that he needed to take control of the messaging from his administration, so he conducted his own press conference. And allegedly, according to a story out of the New York Times by Maggie Haberman and a few other people, Maggie Haberman's good folk, so please read her. He felt that his tweets weren't being taken seriously and that he is his best representative and he could do better than Sean Spicer and Kellyanne Conway, despite the fact that really what seems to be holding back Sean Spicer and Kellyanne Conway is Donald Trump's White House. You know, in really simple terms, those guys aren't on the same page, or that gentleman and that lady are not on the same page, because they're getting conflicting bits of information. It may be because Kellyanne Conway is on the outs with the White House. That's one suspicion we don't really know yet. The other thing is that what's most embarrassing for them regularly, and the reason why people aren't taking them seriously, is Donald Trump is sending them out there to lie rather preposterously. And it doesn't matter. You know, you can be Ron Ziegler. You can be Tony Snow. You can be Dana Perino. You can be Ari Fleischer. You can be Jay Carney. You can be any of these guys. It doesn't matter how talented you are. If you are sent out to lie that preposterously, that often, on the same subject, after it gets debunked and debunked and debunked, you're going to lose the room and you're going to lose the narrative. So Trump set out to own the narrative and reassert control of his own administration here. And it was spectacularly terrible. You know, it even if it weren't a press conference, it would have set a record for just staggering stupidity and incompetence. And you know that peripheral embarrassment that you feel when you watch Michael Scott walk out into the office and he's about to deliver some god-awful speech, and you can tell it's really important to him. But the whole idea in that episode of The Office is to just make you feel cringing shame, that just proximal empathetic dread for somebody else. That is what you should feel for the concept of language, causality, the presidency, really, you know, any shred of dignity to this process should have been overwhelmed and subsumed and just finally destroyed by, you know, this embarrassing travesty. So Trump comes out and he immediately began lying about his electoral victory. He said, you know, I had 306 electoral votes. That's the largest since Ronald Reagan. That's not even remotely true. It's not even the largest for a Republican. George H.W. Bush did better than that. Obama did better than that in 2008. He did better than that in 2012. The first reply was from an NBC reporter who pushed back on that. And Trump said, well, that's just something I was told, which is not really what you want to hear from a president. Because, you know, at that point, you can just be like, look, Mr. President, one day I was driving home and this car got up behind me and it flashed its brights. And I kept driving and I tried to get away and it kept getting closer and closer to me and it kept flashing its brights. And then I got home and I got out of the car and I went to run for the front door because I thought, oh no, this car is going to, you know, the person in it's going to kill me. And instead the person, you know, I trip and the person confronts me and it's like, there was a killer in the back seat with a knife. I was flashing my brights every time they were about to stab you. You know, it's a great story and there's a reason why urban legends exist. And we all discover little bits of data on the internet that feel really good and we think they must be right. And we never check. And that's fine, especially if you're dealing with pop cultural ephemera.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Or fun stories or just, you know, something you heard about a band or a famous character. This is the president of the United States who evidently is willing to just say, you know, I had this sweeping electoral victory because some guy told me. That's frightening because, you know, either, you know, he's that committed to lying and he's never going to let it go. And he's that petty in his commitment, or he really is that stupid. You know, he really is that empty of a vessel into which anyone can pour anything. And when you think about the people who are around him, that's a very, you know, unsettling prospect. But, you know, the saga goes on. I just want to read you a couple of excerpts here. You know, for the most part, it was your standard Trump presser. He demonized the press repeatedly and, you know, said that they would not report favorably on him and that they were grinding axes. He again asserted the fake news thing when I believe CNN asked him if, you know, it was Jim Acosta of CNN asked, are we still fake news? And Trump said something like, you're very fake news, which led to peals of laughter from Spicer and Conway. But there are a couple of exchanges here, and they're just illustrative of, I think, how frightening all of this stuff can be when you stop and look at the text. I'm as guilty of as anybody of wanting to make fun of Trump and wanting to find the humor in it. And I do that as a reflexive, self-protective mechanism. Yeah, I do it also because, you know, it's just there. If he's just going to be a walking fucking setup for endless punchlines, you've got to take that opportunity. But in doing that and in reporting on these things in excerpt, And also just becoming familiar after all this time, after nearly 2 years, of the cadence of his inanity and the kind of the leitmotifs of inanity that he returns to. You know, we lose sight of the fact that they are prima facie frightening. Just very, you know, these things should always unhouse us. And as we take refuge more in humor, or in thinking of him as a sort of pastiche, we lose touch with how immediately just genuinely terrifying this stuff can be. So anyway, he's asked about his relationship with Russia. And here's Trump's reply. And this was transcribed very nicely here. Let me attribute this properly. This was transcribed by somebody going by Chris, K-R-I-S underscore Sacrebleu, one word, S-A-C-R-E-B-L-E-U on Twitter. Anyhow, so here's Trump's quote. We had Hillary Clinton try and do a reset. We had Hillary Clinton give Russia 20% of the uranium in our country. You know what uranium is, right? It's this thing called nuclear weapons and other things. Like lots of things are done with uranium, including some bad things. Nobody talks about that. I didn't do anything for Russia. I've done nothing for Russia. Hillary Clinton gave them 20% of our uranium. Hillary Clinton did a reset, remember, with the stupid plastic button that made us all look like a bunch of jerks? Here, take a look. He looked at her like, and here he makes a face, what the hell is she doing? with that cheap plastic button, Hillary Clinton. That was a reset. Remember, it said reset? Now, if I do that, oh, I'm a bad guy. If we could get along with Russia, that's a positive thing. We have a very talented man, Rex Tillerson, who's going to be meeting with them shortly. And I told him, I said I know politically it's probably not good for me. Hey, the greatest thing I could do is shoot that ship that's 30 miles offshore right out of the water. Everyone in this country is going to go, oh, it's so great. That's not great. That's not great. I would love to be able to get along with Russia. So, I mean, this is farcically funny. I mean, just looking at the text, it's farcically funny. And it ends with him going, yeah, you know, I could just essentially strike a Russian target off American shores and precipitate anything. And that'll be the greatest thing I could do. Everyone in this country is going to go, oh, it's so great. So there's another excerpt that I wanted to read to you guys that is generally sort of unpleasant, and it's of a piece with some other things that have been going on with the administration. So this is from The Hill. This is the text from The Hill. President Trump got into a heated exchange Thursday with a Jewish reporter who asked what the president would do to combat the rising number of anti-Semitic incidents. And if you're not in the United States, Jewish community centers have been targeted with bomb threats repeatedly. There's been about three different waves of these. It was immediately after the election. And then really in the last 2 weeks, it spiked up again. And there was the second one. I'm not really sure when it was. But there's been a general rising of threats and attacks on both Semitic peoples in the United States, both Jews and Muslims. So anyway, Trump's conducting this press conference, and he goes on a little rant about how everybody is treating him so very, very poorly. The media hates him. So he was going to call on a friendly reporter. So he called on Jake Turks of Ami Magazine, which is a Jewish publication. And Jake had this question. He said, what we are concerned about and what we haven't really heard you address is the uptick in anti-Semitism and how you intend to take care of it. And then he went on to cite some stats about what I was just telling you about. So basically, like, Trump starts to answer, and Jake Turks starts to reply, and Trump says, quiet, quiet, quiet. And Trump says, see, he lied that he'd get up and ask a very simple question. So, you know, welcome to the world of the media. Let me tell you something. I hate that charge. I find it repulsive because people that know me, and you heard Prime Minister Netanyahu yesterday, did you hear him? Bibi, I've known Donald Trump for a long time, and he said, forget it. So you should take that before you get up and ask a very insulting question like that. So a second reporter then gets up and mentions that quite accurately that Jake Turk's question is not about Donald Trump at all. And that he was just asking, what are you going to do to combat, you know, I'm a Jewish writer here in America, and Jewish people in America are being threatened. What are you going to do about it? Trump, you know, and insults him. And he goes on at one point to say, like, I am the least anti-Semitic person in the world, which, I mean, I don't know how you really quantify that, but I would figure that a guy who hired Steve Bannon probably doesn't count as number one on that list. The reason why I bring all this up, I mean, you know, it is like genuinely horrifying, is that when I put the quote, and that's not the whole exchange. If you can find it on YouTube, I highly recommend it, because it is just sort of stunning to see him get asked a question that in no way targets him. And in fact, that's it's a gimme. It's an opportunity. Now, this is a White House that released a statement on Holocaust Remembrance Day that didn't specifically mention the Jews in relation to the Holocaust. And they went ahead and basically did an All Lives Matter thing. And I don't really buy that for a really basic reason, that the other people, the other 6 million people or five, depending on how you want to, you know, depending on what figures you're seeing, that were killed were, you know, Romani, homosexuals, you know, and basically other minority groups that were being targeted. And that the people in this very conservative White House, I don't think have a lot of intrinsic sympathy for. So the erasure of Jews from Holocaust Remembrance Day, I don't think was done because all lives matter, because if you look at their attitude toward homosexuals, communists, you know, other sort of, you know, we don't need to get bogged down into discussing the Romani, but, you know, here's a group of people that wander over borders and don't have a nice fixed nationalistic presence in the way that somebody like Steve Bannon might prefer them to. I just don't buy that these people were the ones who were supposed to be rehabilitated by not focusing on the Jews. So, you know, you've got this climate where this White House already has this mark against it. And all Trump has to do is just take this softball and say, yeah, this concerns me too. This is a very serious, issue. And we will not tolerate violence toward, Jewish Americans. You know, they're citizens as much as we are. And we are going to use the strength of the Justice Department to root out these people targeting them. No, instead, he takes it personally. He acts as if he's been, slighted as an anti-Semite. And, you know, the only thing that really comes to mind in reaction to that is, the old line that narcissists never self-describe so well as when they object and when they accuse, right? You know, the I am absolutely not that, you are that. Impulse generally responds to an accurate painting of where your attitudes lie. If you may remember during the campaign that we had reports that Donald Trump praised Jewish accountants and insisted that they be hired, but he didn't refer to them as Jewish. He referred to them as those guys with the little hats. He meant yarmulkes, but basically said, go get me Jews because they're good with money. Other issues that also lead you to suspect the credibility and that the POTUS doth protest too much is the fact that the Justice Department has indicated the Trump administration has said that what they would like to do is focus more on radical Islamic terror. So that what they're trying to do is coordinate DOJ and domestic intelligence to focus on that. And in when they're talking about combating terror, they don't fold in terror from white nationalists, white separatists, and white supremacists, which, if you'll recall, the very beginning of the Obama administration, the Obama DOJ released, released a study basically saying, like, you know, the number one incidences of domestic terror all come from white people. And if you remember back in the early days of the Obama administration, we had such fun things as that guy in Maine who was constructing a dirty bomb in his own garage. Then you have the rise of basically, you know, the what we now consider anti-Obama sentiment. That wasn't created by Obama. That was a festering aggression against a multicultural federal government. And, you know, if you may remember... a rather big indicator that this preceded Obama and that this attitude has strong antecedents would be look at the career of Timothy McVeigh, the man who destroyed the Murrah bombing in Murrah building in Oklahoma City. So, I mean, this stuff was extant and this DOJ does not seem particularly interested in it. Now, I mean, that obviously, like, there are some good bipartisan, comity with that. A good example there might be, I think it was in 2010, a white Texan flew a plane into the IRS building. And you may remember that Newsweek had a roundtable about what should we call these sorts of people. And they said, separatists, militia types, everything but the word terrorist, despite the fact that if you think about the major terrorist attacks in the U.S., or at least the most recent major terror attack in the U.S., it was somebody flying a plane into a fucking building. So, there is a sort of a bipartisan and sort of educated Washington Mandarin kind of consensus that we don't focus on these people. And we don't consider them a problem. We don't use the word terrorist. Dylann Roof, no matter how obviously he tried to inspire terror, we call him a white nationalist or a troubled young man, as opposed to somebody who's deliberately using violence to advance a political meme, a political aim through terror. So Anyhow, you've got this sort of extant attitude, and Trump just starts lambasting this guy, saying, "I'm not that, I'm not that, I'm not that." And you know, if his unwillingness to engage in a gimme, just an absolute lovely softball of a question, where he can put to bed accusations made against him or suspicions that people have about him with a nice gesture toward the Jewish American community. If he can't do that, there are a lot of basic functions of being a president that are clearly out of his reach, mentally and temperamentally. So that's the good news. Thank you very much for listening, and I'm going to get you out of here just as soon as I can play some silly music.
But if you go, as an example, your CNN, I mean, it's story after story after story is bad. I won. And the other thing, chaos. There's zero chaos. We are running. This is a fine-tuned machine.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.